Good afternoon and welcome on this stormy, rainy November day. I am Kim Ariano and you're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. Also in the studio today is producer Eric. How you doing, producer Eric?
I'm doing okay. Good afternoon.
Did you produce this rain?
I did it.
That's not your thing? You just report on it?
Right.
You don't make it happen?
Like I said, I if I had that kind of power over time and space and the weather,
you wouldn't be here.
Not that I don't enjoy being here for the show, of course, but I would be incredibly powerful and very, very wealthy, and I just probably wouldn't work.
You know? Yeah, no, it wouldn't work. It was funny. I was down in Tukwila half an hour ago thinking, you know, giving myself a half hour to go the 7 or 8 miles from Tukwila to here is overkill, and the next thing I know, I'm running in here, so I'm going to take a deep breath. And welcome our guest today. We have Tim Anderson, and Tim is here as a participant in the Occupy Seattle movement. Is that the politically correct way to say
well
that?
Very well chosen term.
I tried. I thought about that. How was I going to introduce Tim? Tim's been on the show before. He's a friend of the Walk the Talk with Kim. Tim came on, last year?
I think so.
Or earlier this year?
Maybe earlier.
And talked about Sociocracy. Which was a fascinating comment or fascinating idea and conversation. And it fits right with all of this change that's in the air and all of this stuff that's going on in the world today. And I wanted to bring Tim on, first of all, because I think he has an eloquent way of stating the obvious in a thought-provoking manner, which is really great for talk radio because you want to have thought-provoking discussion. It's better than falling asleep while you're on the radio. And second, I think that Tim has done a good job, from my perspective, following him on Facebook and having conversations with him on identifying and kind of feeling the pulse, not speaking for, but understanding from a bird's-eye perspective the experience that one has when they are involved in this movement called Occupy
Seattle.
Put your city there, but yeah. You specifically have done Occupy Seattle. So I have a million and four questions, but rather than steer this in any one direction, let's hear from you. So tell the audience a little bit about you, but I also want you to kind of move into, so this Occupy Wall Street thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your reaction and what'd you do about it?
You know, pretty much the same day, I think, I thought, there's got to be a Seattle version of this. I mean, this is Seattle.
Right.
So I looked around and I found that there was going to be something happening at the Federal Building that night. I think it was a Friday night. And I went down there and there were maybe 100 people. It was dark. It was a nice evening. And it was a complete disorganized mess.
Right.
I mean,
a bunch of people just showed up and said, okay, what do
here
we do
we
now?
Are. And there were some very smart, sweet people, but they couldn't have organized their way out of a wet paper sack. But I'm a professional organizer, right? So my standards are extremely high. But I loved the vibe. Mm-hmm. And everyone seemed nice and they seemed to care. And everyone had something to say and everyone was very excited. We were riding on the coattails of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And
the rest of the world, for that matter. I mean, this exploded worldwide, right?
At that point, it wasn't worldwide. It was New York and a few other places, I believe. I could be wrong. I'm just guessing here in my memory. I wasn't following the news. I don't particularly do that. So I get down there, and this young woman, very smart, was I had talked to her, I guess, already online. And so she knew I was coming, and I said, look, I'm available if you need help. And she said, yeah, I probably am going to need some help.
Yeah.
At college age. And so she said, you know, just come up and help me if things get out of, you know, if you think you can. And so I was hanging way back because it was pretty young. Mm-hmm. There were some older guys like me around and women, but it just seemed like this wasn't necessarily the place where I should sort of step in and sort of take over because, you know, it just felt like the momentum was strong.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point she just came up to me and just like desperately, help me, because things were completely getting boring. You know, everyone was talking. It was completely disorganized. And so I started doing a little consensus stuff and, you know, helping with this and that. And then I just got pissed. And I basically made a very impassioned speech about, you know, this is an important movement and this is happening all over the place. And this is possibly the beginning of the end of of the beginning steps of us becoming a mature civilization. And I was cussing and I was like, we have got to do better than this.
You're talking about a mature, organized civilization and cussing at the same time.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Right. No, it doesn't make any sense at all. But I was very, I mean, I get very passionate and I made a lot of people mm-hmm. angry and a lot of people happy.
Right.
Because I was saying we have to, like, I don't even remember what I was moaning about, but something about how badly organized people were, right. weren't respecting each
other. Now, is this the
other.
Same night or is this over the
this
course
is the
of
same
a couple
night.
Of days?
No, this is
oh
all
my gosh.
Friday night.
Okay.
And so
you had no idea that there was more cussing to come?
No, cussing has been, I've been getting good at it. So that night I stayed up late with a few people, especially her, and we said, how should we run this thing tomorrow? Because mm-hmm. She was somehow, it fallen into her lap because she's a smart political person. And so basically she, with my help, ran the whole next day, which was at Westlake. This is when we moved to Westlake that morning. And we tried to run it sociocratically. I mean, she got sociocracy instantly. She's mm-hmm. extremely smart and she knew about consensus and she was just eating it up. Mm-hmm. And so it was.
For those that don't remember, tell us a little bit about that. I seem to remember this. It runs just like it runs in your house. You've got
right.
mom and the kids, and how do you make decisions?
Right.
Tell us a little more about that.
You use the rules that you'd use in a healthy small group of 32 people or fewer, the way we evolved mm-hmm. for all of human civilization until the last 12,000 years and when agrarian society enabled us to live in groups larger than 32, which we still haven't adapted to or evolved to the point where we can handle it. You use the basic rules, like you don't ignore anybody. You have no secrets. You don't vote. You don't outvote people and make minorities that can blow back and make you, you know, sorry that you did that. You listen to everybody. You know, if there's a problem, if it makes sense, you deal with it. And you don't move forward until everyone's more or less on the same page, unless they're a child or crazy. Mm-hmm. Okay. If they have a good, the sort of what we call a paramount and argued objection, you listen to it and you keep listening to it until you go forward. And the example I like to use is if you're a small, healthy family, and you want to go to, say, Disneyland, and say the 12-year-old boy or girl doesn't want to go, you don't ignore that person. If you do, you will pay for it.
Right.
And this is the mistake that we constantly make in groups of larger.
Because we feel we have to make, I mean, our society, right from the Industrial Revolution, if not before on, says, make decisions, make it quick, live with your decisions, move on, that kind of thing. And we don't take time because it takes time.
And every time you make a decision like that that ignores the minority, the power trickles up to the oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
Always. So they end up, and then they get to oppress people, and then they create a class society where you've got people who are suffering. Well, it's like this world where we have 2/3 of the people on the planet dying of poverty before the age of 40.
Right.
Not good.
Right.
So it's Occupy Seattle, you know, it became pretty clear to me. I mean, I got angry and I was frustrated mm-hmm. and I made some enemies and I was like, I thought some people were crazy who were just pissed that I had shown up and taken over. and I thought,
this is a typical storming,
right?
Under the storming, norming, forming, performing model. This was the storming. Probably still is a little bit of the storming phase.
A little bit. No, the storm has gotten huge.
Yeah.
The storm is gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
Skipping ahead, just so you know where I'm going with this, basically we're at the point now where Seattle has become one of the Occupy movements that has not been able to come to consent on being a nonviolent movement.
Mm.
We have at the GA, which is pretty much ignored by lots of the mainstream mm-hmm. activists and lefties around because it's too chaotic and obviously taken over by the violent sort of pro-violence anarchy people and others who are sympathetic and, you know, people who are just hanging in there are still there. But basically it's not a democratic process anymore. I mean, I don't really think it ever was. It was never in any kind of, we weren't even following the basic rules, which came out of Barcelona or from Spain anyway, Madrid, the Madrid process it's called. I worked on that. We're not doing that. And you can overpower a block or you can support a block with 80% or with 20%. Mm-hmm. of the voting people. And then if you have it, if almost nobody's there, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people in Seattle who are involved in the Occupy movement. But they aren't at GA. Their votes aren't. There's no proxy voting yet. There has to be. But, you know, if we're going to make this a global movement, there's none. And so basically the GA is dominated by people who are able to be there in the middle of the night.
And when you say GA, you're talking General Assembly.
General Assembly, right.
So for those of people that get what they get filtered through what we call traditional media, not that we're going to make them evil, you know, scorpion and frog. And they're not. They're people. Just
right.
We all are people. They're getting paid to do a job and they're doing a job.
They're getting paid off to do a job.
And when we all get paid off at some yeah. form to get to do a job.
Everybody's whipped by somebody.
But everybody. But for those that are kind of listening to you going, okay, it's a bunch of crazy people yelling and shouting and screaming. Mm-hmm. The point of this, to me, feels like what the Occupy Seattle in general mm-hmm. and the Occupy movement in general is striving to do at that time is to normalize themselves enough to get a process. And once we figure out the process, then the next step is to come up with, okay, so now we have a process for discussion,
right?
A process for listening, a process for understanding, a process that puts not parameters, but an organization around the system.
Right.
That is the 99% or whatever you want to call it. And then is the next step at that point to start tackling the issue or issues or determine what the issue or issues are?
Well, that's a great – we're getting ahead. Let me just finish what I was saying.
Oh,
I think where we're going is a division of the movement between those who are open to being violent and those who are not.
Right.
In New York has been able to say this is a nonviolent movement, and they still had a combination of crazy people, true believers, you know, who really believe that violence is the right way, and, you know, they have some historical precedent, mm-hmm. and provocateurs who are paid to – make chaos. And all three of those are probably in Seattle right now.
Who's paying to make chaos?
Oh, the national security state is paying all kinds of what's called agent provocateur, agent provocateur in English, to, you know, to infiltrate and make chaos in the movement and, you know, and also notice what's going on. They've already admitted it, that it's happened. There's some, I guess, guy in New York was busted and then admitted it. He wrote an article about it or something, but this is happening probably for sure all over the country.
Right.
So those three classes of people are strong in Seattle, and probably people are coming here because this is a city where you can get away with it because, you know, they have critical mass. They don't mm-hmm. have the majority. Maybe there's 25 or 35 or 45 of them, depending on the day and what's going on. But we're not able to get the GA to become either Democratic or nonviolent at this mm-hmm. point. So we're probably going to have to divide the movement.
We need to take a break, but
sure.
when we come back, we're going to talk more about this incredibly monumental and important thing that's going on here. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. Come on back in a few minutes here, and we'll keep talking with Tim Anderson. And we're talking about Occupy Seattle.
Smells of corruption. I manipulate to recreate this air to go around saga. Got a launder.
Hi, I'm Jerry Pearson, and with my wife, Michelle, we're local residents just like you who have a passion to help those who have been harmed or wronged in our communities. If you have a personal injury from a car crash or a property hazard, an industrial injury, a defective product, or nursing home neglect issue, the Pearson Law Firm can help you anywhere, anytime. Contact us today for a free case evaluation at 1-800-423-8473. The number again is 1-800-423-8473. Or check us out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Does your organization crave new ideas? ThinkShop can help. For 16 years, ThinkShop has inspired creative thinking at Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and nonprofits. We help you imagine new offerings, strategies, or ways of doing business. Our proven processes and engaging workshops deliver powerful results. Learn more at thinkshop.com.
Have you heard the phrase, "The beatings will continue until morale improves"? To organizations, employees are the biggest assets and biggest fans. If they're not feeling heard or appreciated, the bottom line will suffer. For mission-driven organizations, the reliance on employees and managers to rally around the core messaging is critical for success. At Walk the Talk for Success, we provide leadership best practices, education, and communication strategies for mission-driven organizations. Whether you're a business of one, middle manager, or leader in a large company or nonprofit, our experiential workshops and focused on organizational psychology will assist you in achieving success with your messaging and vision. Call for a free consultation today, 425-888-9790, or check us out at www.walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Walk the Talk for Success, achieving your message through understanding human behavior.
Click the shows page on 1150kknw.com for the scoop on Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm Kim Ariano, and I'm here with Tim Anderson. Tim Anderson was down there kind of in the beginning when this whole thing started forming, this Occupy movement in Occupy Seattle. And I've been following a bit as much as I can. At some point, you get lost in the chatter, I guess, for lack of a better term. And so then you look to the news media to tell you what's going on. And I'm not sure if that's really accurate either. I mean, you get, you know, the bits and pieces, and no matter what you listen to. Mm-hmm. You're getting the sensationalism, but it's really hard. And for, you know, the layman that's, you know, going to work every day, taking the kids to school, right, wanting to participate. But, you know, at this point, you know, the thought of going down there with my kids scares the crap out of me. So that's not something I'm going to be doing anytime soon. But
soon you will be.
Let's hope. Now, what you were mentioning is that there seems to be a fraction, or there needs to be kind of a split between at least coming to a consensus whether this is going to be a violent or non-violent. I mean, is that an accurate summation
there
of what you're talking about?
There is definitely a split.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably some people in a gray area between the two also who aren't really sure. But it seems like New York and a number of other cities have basically said non-violence. This is non-violence. Chris Hedges wrote an article that went viral this morning saying that the way revolutions succeed is by strictly adhering to nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start getting people like from the army and the police who will not, attack nonviolent, strictly nonviolent protesters, as we saw in the film Gandhi and in the reality of Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. too. That's the civil rights movement. It tips when we can adhere to a nonviolent discipline. That's why some of us are calling this a love revolution or a love army or a love war. We're going to be very, very militant and get ourselves in a lot of trouble with the law, but we are not going to be violent. If we want to succeed, that's how we see it, the nonviolent, you know, Martin Luther, the Kingians, as they're starting to be called, Gandhians.
And I know that's beautiful to me. You can even make that, you know, between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. I mean, that's a division of how we get there.
Sure, sure.
But when you say violent, and again, I know you're not speaking for that part of the faction. You're definitely on the nonviolent side.
Yeah.
But socially speaking,
mm-hmm,
when you talk about violent, what does that mean? I mean, does that mean they're going to get rocket-propelled grenades and take out a building? Does that mean terrorism? Does that mean open an act of defiance? I mean, what do you think that means?
Well, I mean, a good example probably of a violent, where violence was an aspect of a revolution successfully was probably, mm-hmm, South Africa, where the Mandela for a long time tried to be nonviolent, and then he, you know, let the African, I forget the name of the army now, do its thing, and that, in addition to all kinds of other things that, you know, the continued nonviolence, the divestment movement, the international movement, all the people working in South Africa probably had helped move things forward in South Africa. I mean, that would, I don't know, maybe it's arguable, but, mm-hmm, you know, probably not by the majority of historians. So they, you know, you acts of violence against stuff,
mm-hmm,
against things, inanimate things, and there was some violence against people too on both sides in South Africa, a lot of it actually. And it makes people want to compromise with the revolutionaries. I personally think it's a thing of the past. I don't think it's going to work as well as, I mean, and then you get blowback, and then South Africa is still a mess right now. I think probably things would be better in South Africa today if we had stuck with a nonviolent revolutionary style there.
Right. Well, so let's assume that goodness will prevail.
Smartness.
You know, well, just the idea that people inherently, I don't believe, really want to hurt anybody else. We, mm-hmm, all want to be able to live and be free and be able to eat and be able to care for our family and be able to pay, you know, the modest bills that we have and be able to live in a community.
Yours are
and
modest.
Be, well, yeah, they have been over the last few years, and be able to fend for ourselves and get back to kind of more of a community. And I've really felt that. I've noticed since the economy has downturned and we've seen unemployment, you know, now at 9%, but the true unemployment's what, at 16-17%. And those are people that are working part-time way under what they're worth, or people that have never been able to find a job and just aren't getting unemployment anymore, so we're not even counting them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this population. And what I've seen in my own community is there's a group of people, and it's getting bigger every day, where we're going, okay, so how are we going to feed ourselves?
Exactly.
How are we going to take some really smart people and put them to work in the community? How are we going to create an environment where we can trade for goods and services with each other to fulfill our needs instead of relying on monetary systems? So these things have been going on, I've noticed, and even in my community, they've started to build. Right. But now this Occupy movement comes, and now here's this shock to the system in a huge way.
Right.
Are those conversations happening, or are we still kind of so dysfunctional at this point in this storming phase that we've got some get up and go we've got to do before we can even start to have those kinds of conversations?
No, those conversations are happening constantly.
Excellent.
I mean, it's a beautiful place to come and just get smart and get knowledgeable and get connected. Here's the magic. There's a lot of magical pieces to Occupy. In my opinion, maybe the most magical one is the community. I wrote a little thing the other day, a blog that says basically you have to occupy. We you know, because New York just, they said no tents. Well, that's what we tried. You know, the mayor tried to get here in Seattle to have no tents. No, you have to have the tents. You have to be there because there's magic in being tribe, and we have to reinvent democracy. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, we're going to end up with sociocracy. Because there's some, you know, people have been, the basic rules are the rules of tribe. We have to reconstellate tribe. And when you first get to tribe, you say storming, norming. I say, like, the three stages of relationship is wonderful. The first stage is you're infatuated, right? The second stage is the power struggle, right? Everyone who's been in a relationship knows this. And this is the joke. The third stage doesn't matter because you never get there.
You never get past the power struggle.
Right. But the third stage is called tentative surrender. As a couples therapist, you know, I'm always trying to push the couples. Surrender. Tentatively, you know, you can always withdraw your surrender, but for now, just drop in. And that's what happens when you can get into community. And it's very scary right now because there's a bunch of crack people and homeless people and angry, scary people who've more or less taken over the camping aspect of it. And unless you've got a lot of courage and, you know, whatever, or you kind of go under the radar, it's a little bit spooky. I mean, I was basically chased away because I wouldn't, you know, put up with it. I was like, no, we have to be radically democratic, which means everybody has the same amount of power. And these guys don't want to have the same amount of power. They want to be in control because they think they're right. You know, to be honest, I want to be in control because I think I'm right, too. But I'm not going to do it except by the persuasion of my ability to persuade people with what's right. And if they'll cheat and lie and slander people and scare people and threaten people. And they've done all that stuff, spit on people, threaten women. I mean, it's kind of a spooky place to be, which is why we're going to have to start a different, you know, a different Occupy. So we're going to have a choice. If you want to be with the violent people, that's great. And if you think that's the way to go, go there. And then we're going to have one that's going to get really big because we're going to break free of the violence and we're going to have hundreds of thousands of people.
So what is that going to look like?
It's going to look like a picnic. It's going to look like a church service. It's going to look like a dance. It's going to look, and we have dances. We've had all these things happening already because people are generous. They send pizza down and they come down and they DJ. And it's going to be much, much, much more of that. I mean, I can't predict the future, but this is what I'm working for.
Your vision, Tim's vision.
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking for.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for, is like a giant movement where everybody can come and be welcome. Unless you're violent, you know, and you want to control things and dominate from the dominator culture because whatever, you know, you're hurt because you don't remember that your dad molested you. And so you're taking out that kind of anger. Or you believe maybe legitimately that that's the way to go. Subvert us retarded middle class bourgeois people who don't know that if we don't throw rocks, we won't win. That's, you know, what they say and what they think. Or you're paid by the cops. Everybody else is we're going to have to deal with those, like all of the rest of the progressive organizations in Seattle have done with this, whatever it is, the Black Bloc, the anarchists. They basically just will not work with them. Nobody works with them. Except us. We worked with them. And the 99%, you know, we're 45% Republicans, supposedly. You know, we're the last group in the world that's ever going to be able to function with them. They're, in my mind, they're the other 1%. There's 1% on the right, and then there's 1% on the left. And I would love to work with them. They're brilliant. They have these great ideas. They've got great energy. Some of the smartest ideas have come from what some of those people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that makes it exciting. It gets us a lot of press, which is wonderful. And some of these guys are really smart and sweet.
Like Dr. Cornel West, is that kind of who you're talking
about?
No.
Cornel West is very, very nonviolent. He's a Kingian. No, he's fantastic. We got him down there today at noon.
Well, was he down there today?
Yeah, he was there at noon. Gosh. I was trying to get him to come tonight after his speech that he's giving at
Green River.
Green River, yeah. But I didn't have to do that. I was going to brag him, please let me drive you. I'll drive you back. But he came down and he talked to the folks, and apparently they didn't really hear him fully. But Cornel West is completely nonviolent.
Amazing philosopher, and that's what we need. We need our Socrates back.
Yeah, he's a sweet one and a fun one.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I don't know who the intellectual. Oh, I forget the guy's name. The end of civil. There is a philosopher who's a very smart guy, who would argue that we should be violent, and I have his book and I'm spacing his name. I should have, you know. I thought about inviting him out to Seattle to to go ahead and give your speech.
Why not? I mean, that's what this is all about, right? It's about ideas, and we have to suspend our egos long enough to be able to hear somebody else's perspective
and not make judgment.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it is.
What a great thing. This is so much better than apathy.
Well, the infusion of hope that you feel, I felt, and I think you can still get when you come to the Occupy tents and everyone's hanging around and eating free pizza and trying to get organized and making signs and all this stuff. It's amazing because there's a part of us that maybe in our belly, our third chakra, if you want to use that language, that's power. You know, it's one of the main things that we want as humans is we have five needs: to survive, to have love and belonging, to have freedom, to have fun, and to have power. Mm-hmm. And we have no power. We have no power in this civilization, essentially, because it's all owned by the people who own all the money. The 1% have got whatever, 60 or 40, 90, what a huge amount of the power, because they've got all the money and they own all the Congress people. So we don't have any. So you get there and you think, oh, my God, there's power here. We could have power. Well, there's a bunch of us. And they're exactly right. You do have power. There's power in numbers. The left only has two things: all the people, and we're right about everything. We really are. I mean, the right is a little bit right. You know, they're doing the best they can, and you know, we shouldn't kill them. They're completely and we should all get along. They believe in that stuff. But we're right about how to run the culture. The doctors and the social workers and the teachers and the nurses, the ministers and the rabbis, they're right about how you run civilization, how you run culture. And they're the people who need to be in charge.
I would say that I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I have this conversation with my husband, too, that when I look at it from a big picture perspective and look down on the whole thing, it's all about nature and balance. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, the passion behind a movement, whether that movement is what am I going to have for lunch today, or whether that movement is, you know, how many people am I going to screw today, that passion is the same. It doesn't matter whether you're right or whether you're left. So arguing against the passion, it's the same language. So regardless if you're right or left or right or wrong or whatever those judgments are, to me, that's process.
Right.
We've got to get a lot higher and figure out how we're going to shed the nomenclature and get right down to even the people that are angry, it's about passion. Even the people that feel very, very strongly to get your hands off my, you know, Social Security, my government, whatever it is, that, you know, how do we get to that passion? And that's there. I mean, you can sense that, you can feel that, you can vibe that. What I'm curious about, though, is there seems to be this, we want a leader, but not you. You know, we want to have leaders in the organization, but don't you dare be one that's going to stand up and say, I'm a leader, because you're going to have, to your PowerPoint, people that are going to say, well, why would that person be any better than that person as a leader? And do you see any of that taking place? How do you think that's going to start to net
out? Well, our suspicion of leaders and, you know, their suspicion of me is great, because leaders have let us down throughout all of history for the last 12,000 years.
The whole absolute power corrupts.
Power corrupts. And we believe in sociocracy that leadership is all of us from the rim of the circle. You have to imagine everybody standing in a circle, equidistant from the center, and having exactly the same amount of power. So you and I have 1/7 billionth of the power, which is a hell of a lot more than we actually have now, right? That would be a huge step up for
us.
If
we take it, yes, we can. In reality, who knows how much we have? I mean, really.
Whatever.
I have more power than my dog.
Right. And you have, it seems like we in the middle class in the first world have more power because we have more money than the 2/3 world, you know, most people who are poor. Mm-hmm. And so you could argue that, but vis-a-vis the people who've got all the money, like say in the United States, if you just talk about U.S. politics, we've got nowhere near 1/350 millionth of the power. in the United States. We've got some, which is how much we should have in the United States, but we don't, because this isn't a democracy, a real democracy. This is a kleptocracy or a plutocracy or oligarchy. Where you have the money, the people with the money, or even a fascist state, you can argue. The people with the money have got all the power.
Right.
So
it's the same. It's the same thing. Different name. We are overdue for taking a break. Okay. Obviously, I had a sneaking suspicion this was going to happen with us today. You're so much fun to talk to. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. Come on back. We're going to talk more Occupy Seattle with my special guest, Tim Anderson.
What question was I supposed to be answering?
Hi, I'm Jerry Pearson, and since 1977, we at the Pearson Law Firm have guided individuals and their families through the legal process to seek justice and restitution in insurance disputes and personal injury claims. At the Pearson Law Firm, we work hard to secure justice in civil matters with a network of resources, a wealth of experience, and a compassionate attitude. That's the Pearson Promise. Contact us at 1-800-423-8473. That's 1-800-423-8473 for a free case evaluation. Or check us out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Remember the pink tow truck? It was a Seattle icon. But did you know the mastermind behind the marketing was also one of Seattle's successful entrepreneurs? Learn life lessons from Ed Lincoln by reading his new autobiography, Life Through the Rearview Mirror. Available at area bookstores and online, go to walkthetalkwithkim.com and click on the link.
Here's a unique way to give back. Snoqualmie Valley business owner Chris Fagan of Think Shop is using her family adventure as a way to raise money for good. In December, her family will climb Kilimanjaro, the highest mountain in Africa, to help raise money to build two classrooms at a school in Tanzania. Learn more or make a donation at KilimanjaroForKids.com.
Don't touch that dial. You might miss something life-changing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
That's right. Don't touch that dial. This is life changing. Not you might. It is. You're listening to Kim, and we are on Walk the Talk with Kim with my friend David Anderson.
Tim Anderson.
Did I say David Anderson?
I want to meet that guy.
No, you want to meet David Anderson. Tim Anderson. My apologies, Tim and Kim. You
no
think?
Problem.
Also, just want to remind folks that the show is sponsored by Pearson Law Firm. Expect expert representation and a kind, compassionate attitude. That is the Pearson Promise. We also want to let you know, if you guys want to call in, feel free. You can call us toll-free in Western Washington at 888-298-KKNW. Again, that's 888-298-5569. Or you can also call us at 425-373-5527. Again, 425-373-5527. If you have any questions for Tim or for me, or if you are disagreeing with what we have to say, feel free and call in. We want you to call. We want you to call in. Let's add a voice to the discussion. And if you don't agree with this movement, if you think that this is a bunch of radical hippie wannabes running around there doing drugs and having sex, call in. Let's talk about that. And maybe we can either set you straight or we can listen to your perspective as well, because it's important. Even if we don't hear about it, there's still perspective. And perspective is in reality to the person with that perspective.
Right.
So we don't want to change it. We want to understand it, because once we understand it, that's the only way that we're going to be able to move forward, at least come to some kind of consensus. The reality of the situation are there are a lot of people that are hurting, and there are a lot of people out there that do not have the security that we thought we had back in the 90s. And there are a lot of people that are going to run into crisis in things like healthcare, in transportation, in food. This is a tipping point in our society, and I would probably say even in the world. And I have no doubt, I'm the optimist, that we're going to come out of this on the back end stronger. But how we get there, we decide how painful that's going to be on ourselves and our children. So I love the fact that Tim is here today to talk about this movement. We asked, where is it going? And you made mention that you think that, not that you think, that it is fracturing into violent versus nonviolent. Let's talk about nonviolent. What's the hope? Are we, so logistically speaking, you're occupying down there now. Are they going to remove those tents and people are going to have to go home for the winter and maybe come back out in the spring? You think we're going to get our tribe mentality together in groups of 32 to go caucus together and then
much
come back
than
in the spring? Well, 32 times however many groups of 32 and then come back and have our Maypole celebration and talk about what we talked about over the winter? I mean, what do you think?
I think we're looking for space, more and more spaces. Mm-hmm. I think I've been talking to the folks who want to do the nonviolent version of mm-hmm. Occupy Seattle, and we're talking about looking for a park or a warehouse or a series of warehouses and parks where we can camp all winter and be together and plan and think and, you know, get our computers going. And if anybody is listening and they have a warehouse or a park or a church, a mosque where we can, you know, set up camp, we would love to have that. And we need that really a lot. We need it desperately.
Well, do you think there's an opportunity to do this? I know you said the importance that you kind of have to occupy. I mean, that's kind of the thing.
You don't have to, but it really helps.
It really helps. But so
it's
suburban
part of the
mom
magic.
In the valley.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what that means. I'm new to Seattle.
Me.
Where's the valley?
Snoqualmie Valley, about 30 minutes that way.
So that,
you know, not very far away.
Okay.
We're still in King County.
Okay.
We're half an hour from downtown Seattle.
Okay, ideally?
Yeah.
There would be like a warehouse that has been donated. And on one floor, there'd be a bunch of sleeping bags and tents so people could have some privacy. On the next floor, there'd be a bunch of working groups, people just on the computers and on the phones. And on another floor, there would be teach-ins and mm-hmm. dances and, you know, meditation and yoga classes and all that stuff of life that you go to at a festival, like at the Rainbow Gathering or some dance camp or some, you know, some summer camp that you might go to. And all the things would be happening at once. And it wouldn't be just for you. It'd be all over the country. Mm-hmm. More and more and more of this. And the community, quote, leaders, unquote, would be there teaching classes for free. People with money would be paying as much as they could to make this happen. It would be televised. We would have sociocratic, mm-hmm. you know, representational government happening all over the place, you know, locally, nationally, globally, you know, trying to find a way to make an offer to the 1% that they really are so happy to have received. Mm-hmm. I think the 1% are just as scared as we are.
Of course they are, probably even more so.
They don't know how to get out of this mess. You know, it feels like they were born with a silver spoon in their mouth and somebody has to have it and they're going to have it and there's no other way to stop it. I think if we made them an offer which said something like, look, give us the keys to the army. We'll give them to all the moms plus the Dalai Lama. They can take care of all the military and policing on the world, in the world. Something like that. What we'll give you is your lifestyle. You know, what takes, you can take a couple percentage points of your money to have your lifestyle. You know, when you're a billionaire or a multimillionaire, you don't need much. You know, most of your money is going into business. You can have your lifestyle for 10 generations, but you can't have all that military power. Let us run the military and the economy and the politics.
So we need to deregulate the rich.
We need to make them an offer that they can't refuse. And we need to come up together what that offer is going to be. We need to think with all of us, the 99% or at least the 20% who are thinking and care about this stuff, need to start thinking together at a global level using sociocratic means, using representational government, not representation over, but totally flat power equivalent decision-making hierarchies. When I say flat, I mean completely flat. So everybody has exactly the same amount of power. There's no other way to do it. You can't have direct democracy. That's some of the naivete that comes out of the GA and the whole Occupy movement. And we can only have GA. It's nonsense. It's not. You're not thinking. You have to have, but you have to still, the power equivalence, the flatness is absolutely required.
Do you think that the movement, and again, I know you're speaking for yourself and not the movement, but
thank you.
The general consensus that you hear out there, do people have any faith in our existing government at all?
Oh, a lot of people do. I mean, we could reform it. The basic structure is okay. I mean, it's not like it couldn't be fixed. The kind of government's not important. I mean, as long as it's working in a healthy way. There's lots of kinds of government that would work, all the way from pure sociocratic, you know, wonderfulness to some beat up, you know, piece of junk like we have in the United States that just needs a fixer-upper. It just would have to be a lot of patches. But ultimately,
I think about in the 90s when Patty Murray was running wearing those shoes, those soccer mom shoes.
Okay.
You remember that?
I wasn't here.
Okay. No. So Patty Murray, it was the big deal. It was the whole Clinton revolution where the Democrats got control again. And it was this whole movement on getting back to grassroots people, people that weren't entrenched in the political system. It was your average soccer mom who wanted to do some good. Ironically, she's been in government for I don't know how many years, so she's that system now. But I'm wondering if that's not, to me, it seems like that kind of needs to happen too, is we need to get involved in local government where the people that represent the Occupy or represent the 99 movement or just represent a middle of the road understanding need to be elected to even start to have those conversations.
Right.
But that seems like that might be very, very difficult to do if an individual is not going to get support from the Democrats, not going to get support from the Republicans, so they're going to have to run independent. And then is the Occupy movement or the 99% going to support a candidate in the political infrastructure? Do you see that happening?
Ultimately, it has to happen. If we're going to be the 99% or even the Democrats and the Rainbow and the, you know, the progressive parties and mm-hmm. some of the independents, I mean, we have to do something with the political structure. I mean, all these people who think that we're just going to like overthrow this government with violence have never seen an M1 tank. You know, you don't beat up an M1 tank. You just don't, you know. So I don't know if we need to replace this government. And it's not really my place as a process person, mm-hmm. as a facilitator, to decide to put out the what we should do. What I'm all about is the how. And I actually think this whole movement is about the how. Mm-hmm. And the how is fairly, transparently, quickly, efficiently, with a lot of power, involving as many people as possible, but being flexible and dividing when you need to divide. And creating a structure that's just healthy, like a small family structure would be or a tribal structure would be. So what we do is, to me, it's like what we do is we find a way to decide what to do that's brilliant and it's basic and it's momocratic, as I like to say.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So we're still in the how.
And we're not ever going to get out of the how because we're going to keep screwing up forever.
I love that.
But we can do it a lot better than this, so there's no throwaway people. We don't need to be having people dying of poverty while we fiddle around.
No. It's curious. So my line of work, what I do is I look at people from a psychological perspective and a personality perspective and where they're a good fit.
Sure.
And so you just said something that was very intriguing for me is you're a how person. I am not a how person. I am a, you know, hope and glory and what if and how do we and what do all that kind
of
stuff.
You just said how.
I'm sorry. I should remove that from it. I'm not a process person. Barely balance a checkbook. It's interesting and fascinating to me. Well, I love that. I wonder, are we looking at individual and their talents and their skills and allowing people to kind of separate themselves yet? Are we at that stage, you think, in this movement where people can find a home with their essence in the movement yet?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the fact that we let the violent people take over, I think is really a feather in our cap. I was talking to some...
Oh, that's an interesting way of looking at that.
Because we're so accepting. We want everyone to be involved. I mean, if a 1%er, a billionaire came down, and we would say, well, let's try to find a way to work with this person. I mean, the 1% on the other side wouldn't do that. But, you know, we put up with this crazy stuff for a long time because, you know, there's some brilliance there and we don't want anybody to... You don't ignore anybody. In sociocracy, you always listen to the niggles. You know, if someone's
the
got
niggles.
The niggles, you listen to the objections because guess what? Every new idea starts out with first nobody has it, and then somebody like Einstein comes up with it, and guess what? Only one person is right, and everybody else, in terms of relativity, when Einstein came up with that, was wrong. And that happens. Sometimes everybody's wrong, and every new idea is birthed exactly that way. So you always listen to the minorities. Never ignore them. Because
right.
That's where the brilliance is coming from, and you're trying to get it to the top as quickly as you can.
So I don't think I've ever had Eric have to tell me to take a break before, but he's telling me I have to take a break. We're going to take a really quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap it up. And we're going to wrap it up. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim.
Hi, I'm Jerry Pearson, and at our firm, whether we're working on an automobile crash case or helping a client who's been injured by a defective product, we focus on justice. We're passionate about serving our clients. Our successful approach focuses on the right issue at the right time, with the best tools and expertise available. We focus on collaboration and cooperation. Clients support that process, and they respect our abilities to manage the legal process, to demystify it, and to explain choices and opportunities, and also their responsibilities. Contact us at 1-800-423-8473 or PearsonLawFirm.com. That's PearsonLawFirm.com. Or you can check us out at WalkTheTalkWithKim.com.
There's an exciting new Astrology Hour, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silverman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silverman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilvermanAstrology.com.
Does your organization crave new ideas? ThinkShop can help. For 16 years, ThinkShop has inspired creative thinking at Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and nonprofits. We help you imagine new offerings, strategies, or ways of doing business. Our proven processes and engaging workshops deliver powerful results. Learn more at ThinkShop.com.
1150KKNW.com. It's why they invented the internet. We think. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
But we're never gonna survive unless we get a little crazy. No, we're never gonna survive unless we are a little crazy.
You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim, and we've been having a fascinating conversation on the Occupy Seattle movement, talking philosophy on the organization and understanding it a little bit more. I really appreciate Tim coming on today. And we need to have you on more. We had you on about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and you did a fantastic job. We could have kept talking on that one forever, too. So we'll have Tim back and give us some updates on what's going on. But
I have friends who want to be here, too.
Bring them. We like it. We want to have friends.
And they're smart. Smarter than I am.
We want smart people, absolutely, to have the conversation. It just... unfortunately, my show's not long enough, to really delve into this. But let's talk about how people can find out more information. I mean, you go to the internet, and I mean, how are you going to find what's right and what's accurate and what's middle of the road? Where are some good resources for people to go to get some information?
Well, I like our internet team. You can just go to the .com. It's called OccupySeattle. .org. And that's a little bit lags a few hours behind, but basically you can find out what's going to be happening this week there. There's a good calendar there. It's pretty well organized, and there's a lot of opportunities to just come down and get involved. You know, we have three sites, really, but the main two sites are Westlake, where most of the big events happen, and then the SCCC, where the tents and camping and pizza are. Mm-hmm.
Big events, pizza.
Yeah, well, and also put a tent up. I mean, I make it sound a little scarier than it really is. Yeah. I mean, I got a little targeted because I'm a little outspoken. But you're basically safe. You're safe anywhere, unless you really get up in somebody's face. And then you might get some kind of veiled threats, you know, get out of here, stupid white guy, you know, from another white guy, of course.
You oppress me.
Yeah, you oppress me because you're old and you're white. But, you know, it's okay. It's a great place to be. And you can even bring kids. It's not a big problem. There are children there. There's a chaplaincy tent. There's a lot of really sweet, wonderful, brilliant people. And you'll get the feel and you can drop into the tribe right there. Mm-hmm. We have a new Facebook group for the nonviolent crew. It's called Let's Make It a Love Revolution Seattle. That was put up by somebody, and I've been working on that a little bit, too. I think it's marvelous, and we are in the organizational stage, you know, trying to figure out what to do with all the money and all the committees and who's going to be on which side and blah, 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 blah. And also, yeah, And there's a bunch of other Facebook groups. There's a working group for almost everything. I've been involved in the tactical work group, which does all kinds of stuff. You know, they're very practical, smart people. But there's, you know, you can start your own. There's like no one's really stopping anyone from doing anything. You can start your own occupation. I strongly recommend if you can't get into Seattle on a regular basis, start an occupation wherever you are. Ask a church to open up a space if it's too cold. Or any building, ask, put it out there.
Can I start with my house? Can I occupy my house?
I wouldn't.
Can I occupy my barn?
I would open it up to the community. I'd create a tribe.
Yeah.
I drop Good. Into the tribe because that's where the magic is. And let's learn how to do democracy. We're still learning, you know, how to do democracy in groups of more than 32. That's the magical evolutionary step that we're at right now. Mm-hmm. And we all of our instincts are telling us it's not possible to freeze, to flee, to give up, to stop thinking. Because, you know, if you're alive in a world that you shouldn't be able to be alive in because your instincts are saying, look, you cannot live because the world didn't support anybody. Any groups of larger than 32 for millions and millions and millions and millions of years. Only for 12,000 years has it been able to because of technology. We're fighting against our instincts, and that means they're and those are unconscious instincts, right? You can't hear what your reptilian brain is telling you. It's not in words. It's saying leave or freeze.
Even your limbic system and your feelings and emotions are very, very difficult to put into a cognitive language.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Right. So that upper part of the brain is what we got going for us, which says, look, we can live here. Mm-hmm. 7 billion people. There's enough. We can solve all the world's problems with one third of what we spend on the world's military in a year. We can do it. So you've got to overcome your instincts, just like we overcome our instincts to drink milkshakes all day long. You know, that's my part of me is saying, yeah, do that or eat, you know, nothing but T-bone steaks. That, you know, we can overcome our instincts. We've got to overcome our instinct, which says that we can't live. That we can't survive, that we can't have utopia. I'm reclaiming the word utopia, by the way.
You are. Are you changing its definition?
No, the definition is a perfect place. Mm-hmm. We can have a nearly perfect place. We can live in paradise. We have the money. We have the technology. Let's do it. Let's go there as quickly as we can. And we don't even really have the luxury to use the word utopia as a put down, because that really means, oh, well, the poor people are always going to be with us. They're always going to starve to death. Screw them. No. No. Not when you can feed everybody on the planet for 1% of what we spend in the world's military. No, it's not okay. And also, we don't have the right to destroy the biosphere because there are trillions of generations that are coming. And if we don't, if we destroy the world, if we pop that soap bubble of what's it called, of the atmosphere, if we pop it and the world burns up, we're sacrificing trillions, maybe trillions and trillions of generations. And we don't have the right to do that. That's not a privilege that we have been given. We have to preserve the biosphere for those people. Otherwise, we're so much worse than the worst people in history.
Sounds absolutely fascinating. Now, real quick, before we have to go, you have a call? You need somebody to do some work for you on a
phone? Trying to do this kind of governance globally. We're trying to build an app. Mm-hmm. And we have it all planned out, me and John Bach. And
so where do they call if they want to volunteer to help you with the app?
Call me, Tim Anderson, 206-604-8284.
And that's
we're looking for coders. 206-604-8284. It's a boring job, but we're trying to do this without money and nonprofit.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Brought to you by Pearson Law Firm. Expect expert representation and kind, compassionate attitude. Thank you for listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. Go to walkthetalkwithkim.com for a replay of the show. And all of the information that Tim talked about will be posted there as well. Go out there and have a beautiful day.